Well, welcome to Post Carbon Radio. I'm your co-host, Karin Nyhus, with Bing Gong, who you just heard. Today, we feature a conversation about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was just signed in New Zealand, and how, if it passes, it would affect jobs, food sovereignty, democracy, and the environment, both locally and globally. Our guests today are in studio, Xiomara Castro of Citizens Trade Watch. Xiomara, are you there on the line with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Let's bring you up. And here in studio live is Leslie Christianer. Am I saying that right, Leslie?
Close enough.
All right. And you can let me bring up your mic, too, so we can hear you. Let's do that again.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Thank you.
So Xiomara Castro is the Northern California organizer for Citizens Trade Campaign. She has been working on social issues and corporate globalization issues for over 15 years in the Bay Area as a community organizer and policy advocate. She is currently coordinating a legislative campaign to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and she is also an artist and graphic designer. Welcome, Xiomara.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And as I mentioned, live in studio, we have Leslie Christianer. Leslie is a former educator who is now working to stop the TPP. She organizes in Sonoma County and just last week held an action at the Santa Rosa Mall. Leslie, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, after 7 years of secret negotiations, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, was finally made public and signed by 12 nations last week in New Zealand. It's the latest in a series of international trade agreements, including the GATT, WTO, and NAFTA, which have been negotiated and fought over in the 7 decades since the end of World War II. These trade treaties constitute much of the economic and political rules for what we generally call globalization. Rather than putting the agreement into effect, though, last week's signing ceremony marks the end of negotiations, formalizing that the text of the agreement, which runs over 5,000 pages, is now final. It is now up to the signatory nations, including the U.S., to pass legislation in each of their countries to enact the agreement. In the U.S., the process for deciding on that implementing legislation, as it's called, has already been set, and the process is called fast track. It's an up or down vote by Congress. The TPP is called a trade agreement, but like its companion agreements, it covers a lot more than trade. One of the most important other aspects is protecting the investments, intellectual property, and expected profits of corporations overseas. And one of the most important enforcement mechanisms for this protection are what are called investor-state dispute settlements, or ISDS. We'll delve into all these aspects and more over the next hour. As a reminder to our listeners, we've covered the TPP before on Post Carbon Radio. On November 23rd of last year, 2015, we interviewed Kuhan Pak of the International Forum on Globalization on the environmental impacts of the TPP on precious Pacific Islands and nations and their inhabitants, and on the link between the TPP and the Pentagon strategy known as the Pacific Pivot. You can access that show, and shortly this one, as a free podcast on wmpostcarbon.com, and we'll remind you of that at the end of the show. But now let's get back to our guests, Leslie Christianer and Xiomara Castro. So Xiomara, since this is your full-time job, can you please fill in or correct any important details of the summary I just gave that you think should be mentioned as part of how we frame this conversation? What would you like to add or emphasize to get us started?
Sure. I think you did a great job of outlining exactly where we are in the TPP negotiations. You know, that's just one thing I definitely want to stress to all of the listeners out there is that, you know, with a lot of the media that does get released about this agreement, often people think that they don't have a voice or a role to play in trying to stop this thing. And often it gets reported as if it's a done deal, but it absolutely is not. So what we need to be vigilant of right now is that the implementation vote and when it will come to Congress. We don't know, actually. All we know is that after the signing that happened last week in New Zealand, that the president can put forth an implementing vote to Congress, you know, anytime that he wants. But, you know, you know, what they're looking for before they do that is to ensure that they have the votes from Congress to win that vote. So right now is definitely, you know, a crucial time when there's going to be a lot of campaigning inside of Washington, getting to members of Congress from especially a lot of the corporate lobbyists that went into writing, you know, this agreement, and now they're going to be spending a lot of their time talking to our members and trying to get them to vote for it, or at least lock down their vote.
Ciamara, this is Bing. I have a question. Is this agreement treated like a treaty, and does it have to be passed by both the House and the Senate, or is it just the Senate?
So it's both the House and the Senate, and within our campaign, what we know is that the Senate will be a really hard vote to win. So that's why we're focusing a lot on our members of the House in terms of trying to make sure that, you know, they stand with their constituents. Just the way that, you know, the Congress makeup is right now, we know that we can actually block the vote delay it from coming to Congress if we have our representatives standing with us. So this is a trade agreement, and, you know, it's one of the things that's unusual about the TPP that we haven't seen before is that it actually doesn't have an expiration date. So it will be a document that, an agreement that lives forever, and it's also got a docking agreement, which means that, you know, any country, you know, after the implementation of the TPP agreement that decides to sign on to it can and become a part of it. So right now it's 40% of the global economy, but it really has the potential to be even larger than that.
And I understand that it's under fast track authority. In other words, that there's no debate. It's just up or down. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. So that was a piece of the legislation that went through last year, in the summer of last year. And it basically meant that Congress gave away its negotiating power. They basically gave away their constitutional right to, you know, negotiate this agreement for us, you know, in the voices of their constituents, add amendments and that kind of thing. They gave that power away, so now all they can do is vote up or down.
So, Ciamara, who did negotiate on behalf of the United States?
On behalf of the United States, it was the U.S. Trade Representative, so, you know, and their office. So there's many, you know, representatives that come that make up that office. But the lead representative, our U.S. Trade Ambassador, his name is Michael Froman, and he's actually a former Citibank executive, and he's one of the, you know, main proponents. He's the one that pushed through a lot of the negotiating rounds and got us to the point that we are with these negotiations.
Leslie, how did you get involved with the TPP, and what struck you as the most important about it?
Well, I'm recently retired. I was an educator for several years, and I happened to be watching a presentation by Senator Elizabeth Warren, and she was addressing the Senate and talking about this trade deal. And she was talking about secret international tribunals. Now, I had heard about the TPP before, and probably like many people, I thought, wow, this is going to be really bad for jobs and wages, and wow. But I did not realize the reach of this deal. So I started digging in to the ISDS, and fortunately, there is tons of information online. That's what got me going, and how outrageous it is, and how it's a massive attack on our sovereignty. And one thing led to another about the trade barriers, you know, how this can affect our food safety, GMO labeling, organic food labeling, possibly. There are just so many aspects to this that I am really afraid of.
Leslie, I really resonate with all you've said, because that's how I got involved with fighting globalization, going back to 1999 in Seattle. And through the teachings of the International Forum on Globalization, I learned so much about how this was just a huge power grab by the corporations. And I had to go to, this had to be stopped, this juggernaut had to be. So I went to Seattle and was on the streets with 50,000 other people, and we shut down the WTO. Of course, it's still going, but I think it's sort of in a state of compromise right now.
Let's ask our trade expert, Xiomara. What's the relationship, what's the status of the WTO with respect to TPP?
So actually, the TPP, from what we've been able to read from the text, is actually the parts in there that are about, like, ISDS or, you know, negotiating the rules between the countries is actually even stronger than the WTO. Of course, this would only mean within the countries, you know, the partner countries that are part of it. So from what I understand right now is that some of the, you know, decisions or rulings that may come out of that even supersede the WTO.
You mentioned ISDS. Could you flesh that out? Because it's a key element of this agreement.
Sure. So ISDS stands for investor-state settlement dispute. And so what it basically is it forms this I call them corporate courts. Many people call them corporate court system. And basically what it does is it gives foreign multinational corporations the right to sue governments over perceived loss of profit. And this definitely, you know, has an effect on a lot of our policy making in terms of any kind of policies that we might want to pass that are protecting the environment, public health, and in those rules. And so what we've seen in the past is that with WTO or with agreements such as NAFTA, the trade agreement, corporations have used these ISDS courts in order to gain a better foothold into these countries and have their basically polluting industries be able to increase or get more plants or, you know, operations without, you know, having to deal with local regulations. One of the biggest examples that we have in front of us right now is that the Keystone XL pipeline was, you know, vetoed by President Obama, so we're not going to have that project go through, which was a huge win for, you know, the environmental movement. But according to the rules of NAFTA, TransCanada, which is, you know, is based in Canada, of course, can now sue, and they have put in paperwork to begin that process under the ISDS system of NAFTA. And they're suing for their perceived loss of profits, and they're suing for $15 billion. You know, we're following this case very closely to see what happens, but this is the kind of thing that will happen under the TPP. And the TPP actually exposes us to double the amount of corporations that will have that right to sue us, you know, and other countries that are part of the TPP partnership. It's about 9,000 more corporations than before.
And Leslie has a comment to add.
Xiomara, I'm glad you brought up the Keystone XL pipeline suit. That happened right before President Obama's State of the Union address. And many of us had expected that he was going to spend considerable time talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership during his address. And he really didn't. And I'm just wondering about the timing of that lawsuit, if that may have had something to do with it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think a lot of us were kind of surprised that, you know, because usually he takes that since, you know, after his presidency, a lot of his State of the Union address, he, you know, talks about this pivot towards Asia, you know, writing the rules so that China doesn't. And it's been part of his talking points and the State of the Union address for a long time. So for this last one, he, you know, kind of just like mentioned it quickly and sort of brushed it aside. And, you know, I don't know exactly why. One of the other things that we're seeing is that, you know, and I want to get back to at some point, you know, talking about the power that we have as constituents. And are the voices that, you know, that we need to elevate. Actually, today is a national call-in day, so I want to say that before forget that, you know, right now the AFL-CIO, Citizens Trade Campaign, many organizations are pushing out emails and trying to get everyone to call their representatives today, between today and tomorrow. It's a national campaign. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, one of the things we also didn't see was a huge, not too much of a huge media push after the signing in New Zealand. Actually, what we're seeing is a lot more criticism coming out, you know, from representatives in D.C. And you know, from various parts. And so, it's been interesting, and I think we do have an effect on a lot of the grassroots movement that's happening, the criticism that's coming out, even from, you know, people who were past trade representatives about how this is just a bad deal.
That's interesting. What past trade representatives have come out against it?
So Bush's past trade representative, who, you know, during the Bush era, there was a lot of free trade agreements that were passed. It was actually the first time that trade agreements actually included somewhat enforceable the rules around the environment and labor, and the TPP is even worse than Bush era trade rules. It's even worse than NAFTA when you really stack it up to what happened during Clinton and during Bush. And they've come out and said, you know, that, you know, they're worried about the TPP and then worried about, you know, how unenforceable it is.
So if you're just joining us, this is KWMR. You are listening to Post Carbon Radio with Bing Gong and Karin Nyhus. And our topic today is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, and the voice you just heard was that of Xiomara Castro, who is Northern California Campaign Director for Citizens Trade Campaign. Is that right, Xiomara?
Yes, that's right.
And also we're joined live in studio by Leslie Christianer, who is a local Sonoma County organizer who's been informing herself and getting active around the TPP. So I'd love to get back to your focus on citizen power and that we do have an effect. Before we came in the studio today, the three of us who were here physically were talking about the WTO and, you know, that Bing and I were both up in Seattle then. And I was asking, you know, since we essentially defeated the WTO at that time, how do you see the emergence of this treaty, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the other ones, the TTIP, which is, you know, Transatlantic Trade and Investment, and also Leslie was mentioning the Treaty in Services. Are these sort of the comeback strategy? Is that because people won the first time around, and is it important for us to remember that? What's your take on that strategically?
Sorry, it's
Xiomara.
Okay.
And Leslie afterwards, if she cares to comment.
So the you're absolutely right. The TPP, the TTIP, and the TISA are sort of this package that is coming at us right now. They're all linked together. And, you know, I think one of the things that astonishes me about trade deals, you know, one of the things we say at Citizens Trade Campaign is we're not exactly against trade. We're against, you know, unfair trade. We want fair trade. We don't want free trade. And, you know, this is the 21st century. There's a lot happening, you know, amongst governments across the globe to try and better our standards in terms of the environment. You know, we saw some of the things that happened during the COP in Paris. But trade deals are just like exactly opposite of all of this innovation and forward thinking that's happening in these other arenas. And they're just really so dangerous and they set us back. And really, they're not about trade. They're about extending corporate power. So I really think that these trade deals are an attempt for corporations to continue to have that foothold in around the globe and being able to do what they want, wherever they want, however they want, without any kind of enforcement. So, you know, and they happen in these really sneaky ways, and it's really important for us, you know, it's not just talking about how issues can affect us here in Northern California, but, you know, the whole globe. We're in this together, and so being able to see, you know, what's happening, staying vigilant, being in solidarity with people in other countries that are also fighting these trade deals.
And I guess I was also asking, you know, do we do we have successes in the past to look back on to know that we really can win?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones is the Free Trade Area of the Americas, which maybe many people haven't heard about, but that's because it never went through. So the Free Trade Area of the Americas was even larger than the TPP. It was the entire Western Hemisphere, from Chile all the way up, and it was an attempt to create a NAFTA-style deal within all of them, but it died because of citizen voice and organizing and the movements that come together. And the thing about these trade deals is there's so much wrong with them that, any kind of issue that you care about, this is going to affect it.
And they're written in behind closed doors in secret, and we only know what's been revealed from just the small portion of it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, now we have the text was actually released on November 5th of last year, so we do know what's in the text, and it's worse than what we thought it was. We were only able to get leaks throughout, different rounds of the negotiations, and those were, put out by WikiLeaks. We got the environmental chapter and portions of another chapter, I can't remember. So we knew what to expect, but when we got the entire text, it was worse.
Chiamata, this is Leslie. You mentioned COP21. That is the climate conference that met in Paris last December. What kind of effect would these trade deals have on climate policy?
Sure. Well, for one, as mentioned, the trade agreement is over 5,000 pages long. Not in one of those pages, in any one of those sentences, does it mention climate change. So, again, this is a totally, setting us back kind of policymaking and legislation. There's nothing in there that will mitigate or thinks about mitigating any of the environmental impact that increased trade would have. For us in California, it would mean an increase in fracking and natural resource extraction. Japan is one of the main partner countries, and their biggest import is natural gas. So they're seeking that from the United States. They're seeking more natural gas. The communities here in California will have to deal with that. We'll have to deal with the environmental impact of having more fracking operations in their communities. And nowhere in the agreement, does it say anything about, offsetting that or even thinking about that. One of the languages, the way that, a lot of it is written is countries should seek to endeavor, or countries should try not to, try not to disturb conservation efforts. And then when we're talking about, countries like Peru, which is, are in South America, who are part of this deal, that language falls short when conservation advocates and environmental, advocates in South America are literally risking their lives in order to do the work that they're doing. And, It's pretty awful when we think about the kind of language that's in there when it deals with climate.
Yeah. Chiamata, you actually just mentioned fracking. I just read an article, and I know this information has been out there for a while, but the correlation between fracking and the number of earthquakes we have in the area. And as we know, Napa suffered a pretty serious one. So, again, there is just so much to worry about from this TPP.
Yeah, absolutely. And, many communities are being forward-thinking and working on fracking bans. I know down in San Benito, the fracking ban. Other parts of California are considering passing fracking bans in their communities. And that would be, for a foreign corporation coming to operate in California, that would be a, ISDS suit right there to try and reverse the fracking ban or have, taxpayers pay millions of dollars for them not being able to set up shop.
I'm glad you mentioned the impact on taxpayers because, a lot of people are still hurting in this supposed recovery. that's all gone to the 1%. So, Shimar, I'd love to read to you the sentence that the website of the U.S. Trade Representative has describing what the TPP is and get your response. It says, quote, "The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, writes the rules for global trade, rules that will help increase made-in-America exports, grow the American economy, support well-paying American jobs, and strengthen the American middle class." What's your response to that?
Well, I think it's a lot of flowery language. I think it's really untrue. A lot of proponents of this trade agreement have said, oh, this is the best trade agreement ever. It's the most progressive trade agreement we've ever had. And just, honestly, there's no way they can actually prove that. There's no proof to it. Just looking at the language itself and how, things that we've mentioned already, that it doesn't, mention climate change. One of the biggest things in terms of creating jobs for the United States is that there's absolutely no currency protection in the language. So basically countries, who are taking part in the TPP don't have to regulate their currency at all. And that is the main way that we lose jobs in the United States. When other countries play around with their currency, it makes it more enticing for corporations to set up shop where, they don't have to, their money goes further. So there's no reason for them to invest in the United States or stay in the United States and create more jobs here. So a lot of that is just words.
Chimata, this is Leslie again. I just came across a study from Tufts University, and they use another model to project the impact on jobs. And they actually said that over the next 10 years, it's projected that the United States would lose 448,000 jobs and that the GDP would actually go down. So, it sort of calls into the question, if it's not to protect our economy and if it's not for jobs, what is this being sold as?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's and none of it, and that's one of the reasons to get back to somebody said earlier is, these things are negotiated in secret. They hope that we don't find out. Many people during the fast track legislation process that happened before we saw the text said, yeah, well, we can't release the text. If people knew what was really in it, they wouldn't vote for it. They wouldn't allow this to happen. So again, this is all about, writing the rules for corporations, not for, a sustainable global economy.
Great. And GMR, we're talking with GMR Castro of Citizens Trade Campaign and Leslie Christianer, who's a community organizer around the TPP in Sonoma County. And GMR, when I was living in Washington, D.C. when NAFTA was being negotiated and Congress was then operating under fast track authority as well. The big questions then were protecting workers and the environment, and NAFTA's proponents assured us that those were protected by side agreements to the main text. We were just talking about the projections and the tough study that Leslie mentioned. Do you have background on what happened to jobs and the environment with NAFTA and what lessons we can learn from that in terms of comparing reality to hype in past trade agreements?
Sure. Well, one figure that is always really shocking to me, and this is since NAFTA was passed, and it also includes when China joined the WTO, which was another, huge job loss for us. Since then, about 5 million U.S. jobs have been lost, and, a lot of these industries have left overseas. That's reality right there. And the side agreements, one of the things that the side agreements claimed to do was to help workers who have lost their jobs corporations or their manufacturing leaving the United States. And so right there is sort of like proof that they know, proponents of free trade know that jobs will leave once these trade agreements are passed. And they actually write into that side agreement, yes, this amount of workers will lose their jobs, and they try to do something about that by offering some kind of assistance, which was never really that effective, because many workers who had to go, it's called trade adjustment assistance, who went through TAA because of NAFTA, never regained their, the salary that they had before. There was a lot of retraining that they attempted to do and trying to get them into other industries, but they never were able to regain the salary that they had, that they had lost because of their jobs moving overseas.
And why weren't those terms in the main text of the agreement? Why do you have to have side agreements at all?
Well, because the proponents of NAFTA didn't even consider, the effect on jobs in the environment, and labor in the environment when it was being negotiated. But because there was, again, a great, alliance between labor and environmental activists around NAFTA, even though it passed, we were able to get those side agreements created.
So do you anticipate that as another response that might come back with people organizing against the TPP, side agreements as a sort of compromise strategy?
No, well, it can't be changed right now as it is, right. So there's no amendments that can be made to it.
Okay.
Yeah, and, the labor part is just, really going to be really hard to deal with. I mean, what the TPP is asking U.S. workers to do is compete with countries like Vietnam, and workers there often get paid less than 65 cents an hour, and there's a huge rate of child labor there as well that goes unchecked.
What other policies or institutions plug into the TPP? I mean, some people see, as I mentioned in the Pacific in the intro, that the Pacific pivot as a military strategy kind of plugs in as an enforcement mechanism around trade and shipping channels in the South China Sea. Are there other institutional connections to the bigger picture around the TPP that you'd like to mention?
I think we're just, sort of scratching the surface in terms of jobs in the environment, but medicine access is a huge one with the TPP. It's going to be very difficult for people, especially in the developing world, to gain access to life-saving medication. It's going to increase our costs of medicines here in the United States. The pharmaceutical company, is one of the main people at the table, whereas, our representatives were not allowed to be there. The media wasn't given any information reporting it, but pharmaceutical reps were right there helping to write this legislation. And so what they were asking for is more to get better patents in order for it to be harder for generics to come out into the market. And in the developing world, generics are lifesavers. I mean, here as well, but the situation is much more exacerbated in the developing world. So, pharmaceuticals and medicine access has a lot to do with it. And then there's an IP chapter as well. So, many people might have remembered the fight around SOPA here in the United States. But I think, and I'm not an expert on what's in the chapter, in the IP chapter. If you're interested, I would say go to Electronic Frontiers Foundation. They're based in San Francisco. They have a lot of great information on their website. That's EFF.org. And it's all about, how the TPP will endanger our Internet freedoms. So there's a lot in there about the Internet and copyright laws and that nature.
Yeah, I happen to have one of their articles printed out, and it's entitled How the TPP Will Affect You and Your Digital Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they talked about is that all kinds of stakeholders, like people who are involved in digital production, including artists, were sort of carved out and not included in favor of corporations. And I thought of you because I know from your bio that you're an artist as well as an activist.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, like we were mentioning, there's just so much in this thing. It's really, can be overwhelming.
Are there other alternatives to TPP, or are choices just TPP or international chaos? Haven't there been attempts by other countries, regions not aligned with the U.S. to form economic blocs and trading regimes like Mercosur and South America that work in other ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are alternatives, and you know, we would be great if we could have the time to develop them. Unfortunately, we're using a lot of time and energy fighting these big, awful ones, so it doesn't leave us with a lot of time to develop what fair trade looks like, although, you know, there are organizations out there that have, you know, sort of taken certain commodities and worked at, you know, worked a fair trade system out, like working with coffee, working with chocolate and bananas and sugar and that kind of thing. And I think that those are really great models. They're ones that I wish, you know, our government would uphold and, you know, look at and use as models for the entire global economy and trading system. I don't think it's impossible. You know, a lot of these trade agreements, again, they're just not 21st century trade agreements. They have nothing to do with the kinds of values I think most of us, you know, would want our economies to grow, as well as, you know, other countries as well. They're ultimately really inhumane and unfair trading policies. And I think that it would be great to develop something on a fair trade system that is as large.
You've been listening to the voice of Xiomara Castro of Citizens Trade Campaign. This is Post Carbon Radio on KWMR. I'm your co-host, Karin Nyhus, with Bing Gong. And we're joined also in the studio live by Leslie Christianer, who looks like she has a comment. Leslie.
Another question for Xiomara. You mentioned food. Can you talk to us about the impact of the TPP on our food safety and even food labeling?
Sure. Food is definitely a concern within the TPP. The biggest one is with the import of unsafe seafood. So right now, our enforcement policy in terms of seafood that gets inspected and comes into the United States is very low. You know, I think it's like a percentage point or maybe less than that of seafood that comes into the country actually gets inspected. And with Vietnam and Malaysia being one of the two of the trade, you know, partners, we're going to see a huge, you know, influx of more seafood coming in from that region of the world. And it's just going to be impossible for us to really inspect it all. And like I said, with the labor agreements that are in the TPP, there's nothing, you know, saying that it has to be produced in a certain way, that it has to, you know, come from a certain kind of factory or anything like that. And so it's definitely going to flood us with unsafe seafood. On the other hand, one of the things that we also recently saw, this was a ruling by the WTO, we used to have labeling on meat and pork here in the United States that said, you know, exactly what country the meat was coming from. So this was, it's called country of origin labeling, or COOL. And the WTO just recently struck that down, so we had to get rid of it. And there was, you know, amendment, either get rid of it or pay a fine. And that, would be taxpayer dollars. So Congress passed an amendment saying that, you know, we have to strike that. We have to strike our COOL labeling policy and get rid of labeling. So now when you go to the supermarket and you see meat that, you know, says, you know, USDA or USA, you actually don't know where that meat is coming from. You don't know if it's coming from Mexico or Canada. And I believe it was Canada that sued for that because of the meat that they were bringing into, you know, the United States wasn't selling as much as meat that was grown here in the U.S. So that's and that's more of what we could see from the TPP is that, you know, countries bringing in seafood, bringing in fruits, all kinds of stuff, and if we start labeling our food, which many, many more people are becoming, you know, more aware of where our food comes from and wanting to, you know, buy local and, you know, go to a grocery store and know what they're buying, you know, that's definitely going to be in danger. As well as there's a lot of GMO labeling campaigns happening on a local level, and all of those could be local and state level, and all of those could be a threat as well.
Yeah, I want to just double check with you, Shiomara, because my understanding is that not only through the investor-state dispute system can, you know, a corporate foreign corporation sue the United States and say, you know, your XYZ law that protects the environment or protects workers is a violation and you have to strike it down. But the whole notion of the implementing legislation for the TPP, that means that Congress has to write laws that comply with the TPP, right, in order for it to take effect? Is that correct? Does it obligate Congress to write certain kinds of laws as well as
to strike down some? I would say it also has a chilling effect.
That's right. I wouldn't say obligate, but you know, it would definitely make policymakers think twice in terms of writing something. You know, if it goes against the TPP or if it's something that could be, you know, litigated against an ISDS, you know. People won't want to go through the effort of making it happen and then having to get sued.
Okay.
We've been talking about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that involves countries around the Pacific Rim. But there's also an agreement called TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment between the U.S. and Europe. Is this a kind of a twin of TPP, and does it plug into the TPP, and is a goal to have interlocking treaties that cover the whole globe? How is that global project going?
Yeah, well, the TTIP has a longer way to go. They've just started with, you know, the negotiations, and the countries there are, I would say, much more skeptical than the TPP countries were in the negotiating agreements, you know, partly because Europe has really strong standards, especially when it comes to food safety. They also have much more aware citizenship and civic action when there's a protest for the TTIP or any, you know, something like that happening in Europe. We see like hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. So there's much more for the negotiators to contend with in the TTIP. But yes, it's a global strategy. All three of those agreements are working together. I'm not sure if the TTIP has a docking agreement, but with the TPP again having a docking agreement, you know, that one, coupled with the trade and services agreement, you know, it's basically encompassing the whole world.
So since some of our listeners join us late into the hour, can you just restate what a docking agreement does?
Oh, sure. The docking agreement with the TPP, it basically allows any country to join the TPP if they, you know, agree to the rules of it.
Okay. Well, as we start to wrap up, let's talk about what's going on locally in Northern California, because that's the focus of both of you. Who's organizing against the TPP up here? And Leslie, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Sonoma County.
Well, I see we have a couple. Well, actually, we have one main objective, and that is to influence the vote of Congressman Mike Thompson. I happen to be in District 2, so that would be Jared Huffman's district, and he has been vocally against the TPP from the get-go. But, Chimara, I made my call anyway this morning, once again, to Congressman Huffman. But I'm going to be working with locals in Mike Thompson's district, and his district includes the Santa Rosa area, Napa area, which we know is big wine, and parts of Contra Costa and a couple other counties, part of Lake County, too. So I know that he voted against Fast Track, but I'm just, you know, from what we have learned He is still kind of waffling on the TPP. So our objective is to, you know, do many things, to meet with him, to send him handwritten letters, to maybe do some bird dogging at some town halls, just to let him know that his constituents are against the TPP.
And when you say we, who's we? Who's working on this with you?
Well, I just gathered some friends several months ago. I actually didn't want to be an organizer. I was looking around. It's like, okay, who can I join? And I looked and looked and looked, and I couldn't find anybody in this area, so I gulped and said, okay, well, I guess I'll start and do something. So we've have a group. We meet monthly at the Peace and Justice Center in Santa Rosa. Actually, our meeting is coming up this Saturday from 10 to 12. And we're going to be strategizing. We're going to be talking about ways to, again, influence Congressman Thompson's vote, but also educating the public. We've had several actions. We've gone out to the public. We were at the Progressive Festival. I joined the Climate March in Oakland. We've done several things. And what we've learned is that a lot of the people do not know how the TPP will really impact their lives. So part of our job is just to get out there and tell them about this. So, you know, we have handouts, but sometimes just, you know, talking to people is the best way to go. So that's those are going to be part of our actions.
And you just did one. Sorry, you just did one in Santa Rosa at the mall, right? Tell us about that.
We did. We had over 30 people there. And I always travel around with handouts. And sometimes they're very comprehensive handouts. I actually wrote a TPP cheat sheet, which I like to share. But then I also have, you know, little bits of information targeting the interests of certain people. For example, I have one on food safety and labeling. I have one on climate change. I really want to get one on the impact on the internet. I don't think that's been messaged enough, and I am going to be contacting EFF and see how we can work to get that information out there. It's pretty scary. So we had several people stop by, and we handed out our information in Santa Rosa. We actually had some of the security come over and check out what we were doing. And we mentioned, well, we're here trying to protect jobs. And, you know, that perked their interest. They ended up leaving with some of our information. So one of the gentlemen said, well, hey, why don't you come set up a table in the mall, which, you know, is one of the ideas. So just getting out there and talking to people and letting them know, I think, is pretty powerful.
Leslie, give our listeners, maybe folks in Sonoma, your phone number and email address in case they want to get a hold of you.
Well, I don't know how many of the listeners are doing social media, but I was dragged kicking and screaming to Facebook, and I actually have learned how to tweet now on Twitter. So if you would like to go online, I do have a Facebook page, and it's a public page, so you do not have to join Facebook to look at the posts. And I try to post all kinds of new information on the TPP. So if you go online and just do a search on Trash the TPP, and that would be a Facebook page. Also have another website. This is a meetup.com website. And so that address is meetup.com/trash_the_TPP/. And I have that information on my Facebook page, too. If anybody would like to call me, my phone number is area code 707-634-6242.
And again, your scope is Sonoma County, right?
So mostly, yeah, Sonoma County. Although we've had people come down, you know, from Ukiah at our last event. So people are traveling to where they need to go, you know, and I'm very happy about that.
All right. And Giomara, let's talk about your focus and your campaign in Northern California and how your goals do and don't overlap with what Leslie's doing.
Well, we're working on the same thing. We're pretty much doing the same thing in other key districts around Northern California. Before I forget, I do want to mention again that today is a national call-in day, today and tomorrow. So if listeners get a chance, they've heard enough, and, don't need to hear too much to know how awful the TPP is. Please do call their representative, Congress people in the House.
And let's give out that number.
It's 1-855-856-7545. So again, that's 1-855-856-7545. And you don't even need to know who your representative is, because they'll walk you through the process of asking you for your zip code and that whole thing and patch you in to make a call to your representative.
So is that the congressional switchboard?
It's actually it will link you to the congressional switchboard, but it's a number that we've set up.
Oh, okay.
For the national call-in day.
Great.
And our website is citizenstrade.org, where you can get a lot of information and then, send, other people information about the national call-in day and that kind of thing. One of our main goals is, we always try to do something around the congressional recesses. So there's one coming up for President's Day. President's Day week starts on February 14th and goes through the 20th. And, and sometimes people tell me, well, I don't know, if it really makes an impact or, if people really, listen to my call or anything like that. And I really encourage people, to do it. If you haven't done it before, make that call. Even show up at your representative's office. They work for us. We elected them. They're supposed to represent you and your voice in D.C. and our government. And so you are allowed to go and visit your representative anytime that you want, to walk into the office, to ask to speak to someone about the TPP, to leave a statement, to tell them how you feel. I encourage everyone to do it if you haven't done it before. It really does make a difference.
And you can get together with a group of friends the way Leslie did and have some support and backup, and people can say different things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I really encourage people to do that. And during the congressional recesses is a good time, because our members should be home. It's their time off from D.C., but it's the time that they're supposed to be interacting with their constituents at home and listening to what they have to say.
Great. Well, we're just about out of time, so I just want to give a quick check in case either of our guests want to have a final statement that you'd like to make.
Yeah, I just want to encourage everyone to not get overwhelmed, by the issue, and that, we really do have the power to make an impact. So get involved. And we can stop this thing if we stick together.
I would like to just emphasize what Chimata just said. I was kind of leery about getting into this, so I just took a couple issues and zeroed in on those.
All right. Well, we'd like to give our greatest thanks to our guest, Giomara Castro of the Citizens Trade Campaign, Leslie Christianer, local organizer in Sonoma County against the TPP. This is Post Carbon Radio signing off, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
You can listen to all our programs. They're archived at wmpostcarbon.com.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce when we burn fossil fuels. fossil fuels like coal and gasoline. We're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect in our atmosphere. They remain up there for years and years, absorbing sun rays that come near. But we need to persevere, cause this makes our planets temp rise fast. So why can't we find a way to cut back on our greenhouse gas? We have waited too long. Act now before the moment's gone. The situation's tough, but stay strong until we see the dawn.
The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. Climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind.
The most abundant greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, beats a methane, nitrous oxide, and the F gases by landslide. Everyone releases it when they drive, unless you have an electric ride. It's almost 400 parts per million, and the main reason for climate's rise. Deforestation makes it worse when the trees decay. CO2's dispersed, also dead trees can't breathe it in. Makes it hard to cut back our emissions. Temperature is on the rise, all other animals can blame us, because we are where the fault lies, and it's coming back to maim us. Rising climate poses many problems to the human race. Extreme weather like Katrina and Haiyan, we'll have to embrace. The glaciers are melting, and the sea level's rising at a fast pace. People living on the coast are going to be displaced. Certain species exist.